We're going to open up our Bibles to Romans and chapter 12. Our theme today is renewing your mind. Romans chapter 12. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we who are many form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. We thank God for this reading from his word. I'm going to focus today on verse 2 of this chapter. We've been working through our way through Romans, I think something like the last 15 months, and I trust that it has been an encouragement to you as we have unpacked it week by week. I trust there's been plenty there to stimulate you as we have read our way through it. We come to this particular verse today. A couple of weeks ago, we reflected on the preceding verse about offering our bodies as living sacrifices, making sure that our worship to God is not restricted just to a moment or a day, but every day of our lives and every moment of those days might be an act of offering ourselves in thought and word and deed. Everything we think, everything we say, everything we do might be an act of worship to God, an offering, a living sacrifice, seeking to walk in the footsteps of Jesus day by day by day. And then the Apostle Paul makes this statement: do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now, question: why should we no longer conform to the pattern of this world? Why should we no longer conform to the pattern of this world? Why should we be transformed by the renewing of our mind? Why should we bother with any of that? Once we begin this process, we realize it's not an easy process. And it is a life journey. It's something we begin now. We determine that we will follow this path, but we realize as soon as we step on it, how challenging it is to walk this way, how difficult it is to no longer be conformed to the pattern of this world, how challenging it is to be transformed by the renewal of our mind. Why would any of us take on such a challenge? And of course, the reason for it is within the verse. The purpose is so that we can be able to test and approve what God's will is. In other words, we're asking the question, how can I live in a way that is good and pleasing to God? How can I test and approve what God's will is? That will of God is good, pleasing, and perfect. And I suppose in our language, we're asking the question, how can I live in a way that is good and pleasing to God? A couple of weeks ago, offer your bodies as living sacrifices. Every day, every moment of every day, offer yourself. Whoever you are, whatever you are, offer yourself as an act of worship to God. The question, how can I do that? How can I live every moment of every day as an act of worship? How can I live according to the will of God in a good and pleasing way? Well, the question is answered at the beginning. We can begin to live in a way that's pleasing to God by first not conforming to the pattern of this world, and secondly, by being transformed by the renewing of our minds. You may know of a Church of England clergyman by the name of J.B. Phillips. He served in London during the war in Lewisham in London. And he found that reading with his young people, with his youth group, reading the Bible with them, they didn't understand what on earth the King James Bible was going on about with all the these and thous and everything else, the archaic language that they had. And so one night, J.B. Phillips, when the siren sounded for an air raid and he had to go down into the air raid shelters, he tasked himself with, can I translate the Bible into easy English, into a way that's understandable for my young people? And when he came to this particular verse, he translated it like this: don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold. And what we understand as we reflect on this verse is that what we're being asked to do is practical, it is active, and it's engaged. It is not something that we can simply sit down and pray and say, dear God, I don't know if you ever do this, but dear God, would you renew my mind? I'm going to wait here until you renew my mind. If you do that, you're going to be there a long time. What we are being asked to do, what the Apostle Paul is challenging us, if we are to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, if we are to ask the question, how can I live in a way that is good and pleasing to God? He's saying, okay, it's a tough ask. It's a difficult task. You can discover what God's will is, and more particularly, you can discover how in every situation you can live in a way that's good and pleasing to God. But in order to do that, you need to change. And you will have to work at this day by day by day. You will have to change how you think. You will have to change your perspective on the world. You will have to change your perspective on your neighbors. You will have to change your perspective on yourself. You will have to renew the way you think, change the way you look at the world, your community, and yourself. And so this is practical, it is active, and it is engaged. So it's almost as if Paul needs to pause here and say, okay, any of you on board for the most difficult task you will ever undertake in your life? It's not easy. It's not easy because it challenges us to the core. Why do we think as we think? It's because we've been taught to think this way. And if, how old am I? 51. 51 years old. I have been thinking in a particular way I've been thinking in a particular way for 51 years. My parents have taught me to think in a particular way. In my encounters with my friends at school, my responses to them, perhaps I adapted the way I think. And the way I have thought, it becomes embedded within us. And somebody might ask, why do you think the way you think? Why do you view the world as you view it? Why do you view yourself as you view yourself? And most often we don't know why we think that way. It just is. And we say, this is who I am. And yet the Apostle Paul says, okay, look, if you want to discern what God's will is, and if you want to live in a way that's good and pleasing, you need to put yourself to work and you need to renew your mind. And so we have our question. How can I live in a way that is good and pleasing to God? We're asking, what is God's will? The answer, in a way, is very, very straightforward. What is God's will? What is God's will? The scriptures make it abundantly clear what God's will is, in a broad sense. Jesus is asked, and the answer, what is God's will? It is simply this: love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you do this, you will live. You will live in the fullness of life. If you can love God and love your neighbor just as you love yourself, this is God's will for you. This is God's will for your community. This is God's will for your family, for your home, for you in your place of work. This is God's will for all of creation, that we should live in the love of God. And as we live in the love of God. And we love our neighbor. And we love and look after ourselves. And we could, in a sense, end here and say, okay, we know, we've discovered it, this is God's will. But you know as well as I do that it's not that straightforward, because what the challenge really is in every situation, how do I love? How do I love in this particular situation, in that particular situation? How do I love at work? What is my response of love to the EU referendum? What is my response of love to the horrific news we hear week by week of wars and rumours of wars? What we discover as we reflect on love is that love gives rise to a yearning for justice. When we focus on love and understand love as being God's will for all of creation, we understand, do you know, the fact that there are wars, love says, it shouldn't be like this. Where we see hatred in politics, love says it shouldn't be like this. Where we see destruction, we say, love says, shouldn't be like this. And that is that yearning for justice. This yearning for justice that somehow we understand everything is out of place, it's out of sync, it's not working as God intended. And it's that cry of our hearts, that cry of love. Because we know that's God's will for us to live in love, and that cry from our hearts, it shouldn't be like this. How can it be different? And there is this yearning for justice, and love works for peace. You know, and I've said many times, if we yearn for justice, we need to understand that peace lies the other side of justice. Peace lies the other side of justice. The reason why there have been revolutions quite often through history is because people understand there is no justice. There's no justice for me and for my family. And so they rise up. And it's only when there's justice, only when things are as they should be, that there can be peace. And so Love begins to work for peace. And love, of course, is concerned for the weak, for the needy, for the outsider, for the refugee, for the enemy, for anybody who is different. There is this cry of our hearts. As we seek to live in love, there is that cry of our heart for justice and for peace, that concern for all those who are different to us, all those who are needy, the refugee, the enemy, and so on. Maybe you, like me, having heard the news from Orlando earlier in the week, 49 people gunned down. And I recognize that the whole situation and the whole context, it turns out it's not straightforward. But it was a gay bar, a gay club. And some of the things I've heard said by people who call themselves Christians about those folk who died. It makes me want to go and stand with the gay community and say, I belong with them. Because I'd rather belong with them than belong with the vitriol and the hatred I have heard communicated against them. And I believe that's what Jesus would do. Jesus would rather stand with the outsider than the one who's throwing stones. And that challenges us. But I believe love calls for it. We say, what is God's will? It is to love. It is to stand with the needy. It is to stand with the refugee. My daughter Zoe, just a couple of weekends ago, went and worked at the refugee camp in Calais. Why? Because she wants to stand with the refugee and the needy. And that's the challenge to us sometimes, to put away and put aside our prejudices and say, what would love do? What does love look like? And it does mean standing with people who are not like us. And that causes all sorts of problems for us and for those around us. But we stand because love demands it. We stand with the weak and the needy, the outsider, the refugee, the enemy, and anyone who's different. Love says, I'll stand with you. I'll stand with you. The scriptures challenge us. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you will know how to love in each and every situation. Now, we're going to do something different. So you have to wake up. Here's the question. What is the pattern of this world? What is the pattern of this world? Because it says, do not conform to the pattern of this world. Actually, a better translation, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this age. And I think the Apostle Paul, when he wrote those words, was saying, you look around you, you can see in our world, in our age, there are certain values that people live by. There are certain gods that people worship, whether they say they worship them or not. There are certain values they hold, some principles they live by, certain gods that they worship. And the Apostle Paul is challenging this group of believers, saying, work out what those values are, the values of the world. Work out what the pattern of the world is. And say, okay, I'm not going to live like that. So this is my question. What are the values, the gods, the idols of our age? And I'm going to pause because you're going to talk to each other and ask one another that question. And you might be struggling even now. One way to frame it is to think, if an alien came from outer space and met you. And you had to introduce them to the world. How would you identify the broad strokes of the values of our age? What would you say as we look around our world? What are the things that are important? What are the things that drive our communities and our nations? And if you had to explain that to somebody who didn't know anything about our world. Okay, got a few minutes to do that. If you don't mind, we're going to feedback onto the whiteboard and we'll see what answers you come up with.